Good morning. Is it now too expensive to grow food? Some farmers are deciding to cut back.
I know of farmers who are seriously contemplating that possibility. I think it's inevitable that farmers will make that choice unless something's done.
We'll have more on that later. Now, all this week, we're taking a closer look at insects as pollinators, potential protein, and pests. According to the United Nations, up to 40% of worldwide crop production is lost to pests and disease, and it costs the world economy tens of billions of pounds. With population growth and climate change, there's pressure to reduce the losses. Two universities in the Midlands are planning to play their part by using light technology to help fight crop infestation. Bob Hockenhull reports.
I'm walking down a polytunnel containing thousands of tabletop strawberries at Littywood Farm near Stafford. 24 hectares of the fruit is grown here, but as production manager Gabriel Slabbert explains, the crop is constantly under threat from pests and disease.
Obviously, we've got mildew and botrytis, and then the pests, we've got thrip, aphids, and two-spotted spider mite.
And what proportion of the strawberries get trouble with these diseases and pests every year?
All of it. All the varieties. So, yeah.
Do you lose quite a lot of your crop?
We try not to. If we can catch it in time and prevent it from happening, we don't lose so much.
Gabriel says the pressure to use fewer pesticides has made the crops more vulnerable, but help may be at hand. Dr. Tom Pope from nearby Harper Adams University is on the site today. He's part of a team working towards using light technology to detect disease and pests and stop them spreading. Littywood Farm will take part in the trial.
When a plant is infested with a pest or it's infected with a disease, the smell of that plant changes ever so slightly, both in the composition of the smell and in the quantity of the elements that make up the smell of the crop. The approach here is to use laser technology to identify these changes in the composition of the smell of the crop. And where that's really really useful is because a crop will smell differently when it's healthy to when it's infected or infested with a disease or a pest. But it will also, if we take pest as an example, it will smell differently depending which pest is infecting or infesting that crop. So it has the potential to be a really useful tool in not only telling you have a pest problem, it will tell you what the pest problem is.
We're here on a large strawberry farm, but you'll be able to apply it to other crop growing, will you?
Yeah, we've identified strawberries as a good test case for developing this technology, but really the technology could be applied to any crop situation.
Professor David Webb, an electronics engineer at Aston University, is also involved in the light project.
Rather than indiscriminately spraying crops in case they're infected by disease or by pests, we want to provide early warning that they are being affected so that a very targeted intervention can be taken. And we're going to attempt to do this by essentially creating a nose for smelling the chemicals that plants release when they're under stress, when they're attacked, but using light to detect those chemicals.
And the light, people won't be able to see it, will they?
That's right. We'll be using light with a wavelength that is longer than the red light that we can see.
The project is still in its infancy, but this technology could play an important part in efforts to keep the population fed in the coming decades.
Bob Hockenhull reporting. One of the government's big ideas is levelling up, a commitment to enhance investment in parts of the country that need it. Well, now £110 million of funding has been announced to support countryside communities in England. The funding is from the Rural England Prosperity Fund and is separate from the rest of levelling up funding for England. The money should help local businesses, rural tourism, grants for improving connectivity, supporting local heritage and access to the countryside. It'll be allocated by local authorities. We asked DEFRA for an interview to talk about this, but no one was available. Well, the Country Land and Business Association has been working with the government on this. I asked their vice president, Gavin Lane, whether he was sure this is new funding.
I don't think it is new money. I think it is from the UK Shared Prosperity Fund. But nonetheless, it is welcome that it is being targeted specifically to rural communities.
However, you know, that ring fence nature sometimes gets called into question. And this money is up to £110 million. It depends on local authorities, doesn't it, to actually give this money out. So how does the process work if you're a farmer looking for some extra funding for, say, diversification? How would it actually work?
Well, I think initially it has to come through the local authorities. Therefore, I think that we need some clarification of how that's going to be channeled and how we're actually going to be able to claim it.
And what are you saying to farmers about how they might be able to use this funding if they can get hold of it?
The examples that were given in the press release of it being used for conversion of farm buildings to offices or commercial use, and again for promoting and establishing rural tourism, I think those are the two areas where we would see our membership getting some support, but also looking at some of the community activities for digital connectivity that may be of interest to those that want to go down that particular route as well.
This funding isn't very much, really, is it? £110 million. There are thousands of rural communities across England that might want to use this funding. Your president, Mark Tufnell, has said years of neglect have led to an 18% productivity gap between the rural economy and the national average. Closing this gap would add £43 billion to UK gross value added. What he's saying there, I suppose, is that actually countryside business and enterprise is an asset that has been ignored.
Totally. I mean, there are 12 million rural voters out there, you know, and the government needs to listen and needs to understand that those voters want to find jobs and find employment within their local communities, and they want to be able to develop projects and develop businesses using grant money to provide feasible jobs and employment within the countryside. And that's something that should be encouraged and cherished. At the moment, what we can see is very little in terms of action. But, you know, at least this is a start. At least this is money coming forward. And hopefully, if we can show that this can be used properly, there should be more money to come.
Gavin Lane from the CLA. So how will rural communities benefit? Jeremy Leggett is policy advisor at ACRE, Action with Communities in Rural England.
We certainly welcome that governments have finally made this available, as we have been sort of waiting for it for a little while. The potential difficulty now is possibly because of the delays, is that there's going to be a very short window, most of October, during which local authorities have got to draw up plans for what their priorities are for the use of it. It's both a quick and potentially quite a complicated process in order to get everything set up for the money then to be available to be spent from April next year.
Does that mean it's only going to be for projects which are already in the pipeline rather than anything new?
I think that probably depends on the way in which different local authorities choose to go about it. I mean, there will be some who've been allocated a large amount of money, such as Cornwall Council, who've been allocated £5.5 million, who no doubt will have a very good idea of a number of good-sized projects in Cornwall that are kind of, as they call them, oven-ready. But I think it could be quite a challenge for smaller rural districts who are being allocated a much smaller amount, and it will be a bit difficult potentially to get that off the ground. It is just the timing and the amount, and also to some extent the targeting, because some rural districts particularly may feel a bit shortchanged because they don't get any of this simply because of the way the allocation methodology has been run.
Jeremy Leggett from ACRE. Liz Truss is expected to start her new role as Prime Minister later today, and as such, she faces managing one of the most severe economic challenges in decades. The cost of living crisis is hitting all walks of life. For farmers, there's now a question of whether it's affordable to actually produce food, because the cost of growing a crop or keeping livestock is rising so rapidly. Farmers are used to planning ahead to try to buy in advance, especially when price inflation is rampant, so being part of a buying group which can search out the best deals is one option. AF, which is based in East Anglia, has more than 3,000 farmers and rural businesses on its books. It helps rural business buy everything from fuel and fertiliser to energy and telecoms. I asked their CEO, David Horton Fawkes, for an example of the price rises farmers are facing.
Well, I mean, it's no exaggeration, Anna, to say that the price rises are sort of meteoric. I mean, in very broad terms, fuel has doubled, fertiliser has tripled, and electricity costs have probably quadrupled in the last year. So it's unprecedented, to use an overused word.
So when you're part of a buying group, I mean, how much leverage do you have to get farmers a better deal?
Well, farming businesses, and I have to say, like all businesses, don't qualify for any sort of price cap. So they are exposed to the wider global market. There's no doubt that the principle of buying together does buy better, but it applies differently in different categories. So there are some areas, fuel, for instance, where we have contracts with suppliers that are closely linked to market indices that ensure that we can secure really good value for our members. But there are other areas where we're more exposed to global price increases, like electricity and fertilizer, where we don't have the same level of influence.
Well, we've heard reported that Two Sisters Food Group, which produces a third of all the poultry products in the UK, is warning of a 20-fold increase in the cost of CO2 because of the proposed closure of two factories. And CO2 is used in the killing of poultry and in packaging to extend shelf life.
And it's terrifying. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to put it. There are many farmers who, in reality, would be better off potentially not growing anything or raising any livestock this year, rather than risking trying to raise livestock or grow a particular crop, which they won't get paid for, anything like the cost which it costs them to raise it.
Do you know of farmers who are doing that, who have decided not to grow, not to raise livestock because it's too expensive?
I know of farmers who are seriously contemplating that possibility. And I do know of some who, were they not bound into contracts, definitely would take that option. I think it's inevitable that farmers will make that choice unless something's done.
And what sort of intervention then do you think should be made? We have a new Prime Minister. Liz Truss is a former DEFRA Secretary of State.
Well, I think it's encouraging that Liz Truss represents a rural constituency. And I was actually, before this conversation, was looking at her interview with Minette Batters that she gave last week. And she specifically recognised the challenge of escalating prices of fertiliser and electricity. So, I mean, I'm encouraged that she understands how the rural economy works. She knows farmers, and she has said that she is interested in doing something.
David Horton Fawkes from AF Buying Group. That's all from us today. I'm Anna Hill. The studio manager is Michael Harrison, and the producer in Bristol is Natalie Donovan.